And our guest the last 2 hours of today's program is Hugh Turley. He's a volunteer columnist for the Hyattsville Life and Times. He's a winner of the National Newspaper Association Award for Best Serious Column, Small Circulation Non-Daily Division. And we were talking right before the break about people who spend a great deal of time, money, energy, effort to talk about things. For instance, Mike Campbell has covered the Earhart situation, Amelia Earhart, for decades. And it's, as you say, you keep finding things, and it becomes a passion. I don't know whether it's an addiction. I think it's a passion for truth. I was looking at the reviews of the book, and one individual almost wrote a book just reviewing your book, Philip F. Nelson, who wrote this wonderful review. So people do appreciate what you've done, and I hope that you know that people appreciate people like you who delve into these subjects and just will not let go of them, but will just pursue it and give all the information about it and produce a documented, well-written book that people can learn from. So I really applaud you for your perseverance on this, you and Dave. Are you there?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you. Good.
Okay. You mentioned Philip Nelson. You know, he did write a long review, but he brought in some new information that I was not familiar with. He's a very knowledgeable man on Lyndon Johnson.
Yes.
And he brought up the point that Merton had written to Lyndon Johnson and told him that his Vietnam War was immoral.
Yes.
Nelson also wrote a book about the USS Liberty. I don't know if you're familiar with that incident where there are.
I know about that.
He wrote a book about that, and Dave Martin wrote a great review of it too, by the way. But that's a terrific book, the USS Liberty by Philip Nelson, and he's also written some books on LBJ, and I think he's writing one on Martin Luther King now about the assassination of King, but. Nelson brought up this character, Penn Jones. We actually have a chapter on him in our book. I don't know if you... Penn
yes.
Jones is sort of... He is an odd guy, I'll tell you. It's just... I don't know how to describe it. He traveled out to Thailand and the Philippines, supposedly to look into Merton's death.
Huh.
But all he did was he interviewed Father Say, who was in that room next to Merton's, and another Filipino, and I think he was really out there just to check to see if they were suspicious that
right.
Merton had been murdered. Because see, when Father Say sent that photograph to the Abbey, he asked about the autopsy. He said, "What did the autopsy say?" He just thought they must have had an autopsy, and because he's asking about an autopsy, and he's sending this photo. They were worried that maybe he was suspicious. So Penn Jones travels out to the Philippines and meets Father Say and one of his other monks, and he tells them that he's suspicious. He said, "Oh, I think Merton was murdered." He said, "I think it had something to do with Martin Luther King and the Kennedys." He said, "What do you think?" And he's trying to draw them out, see?
Right.
But see, Penn Jones... is a very close friend and lives very nearby, John Howard Griffin, the Black Like Me author.
Mm-hmm.
He was originally going to be Merton's biographer, but he got too ill to continue.
Mm-hmm.
But John Howard Griffin and Penn Jones were like two peas in a pod. But then Griffin is always telling everybody when they said that maybe Merton was assassinated, he said, "Oh, there's nothing to it, there's nothing to it." But then here's his buddy going out Philippines telling people, "Oh yeah, I think he was assassinated." So it appears that Penn Jones was sent out there and just nosed around to see if anybody was suspicious. And
right.
In reality, the Filipino was not all that suspicious. He wanted to know whether it was a heart attack or an electrocution or an accident, or he was just curious, but he hadn't suspected murder. He really hadn't thought that. But if he had, he might have been in danger. But there was the other monk, Egbert Donovan, was the one that thought it didn't look right. That these guys told him, you better take a picture, you know.
Right.
Didn't look right for them.
Well, Penn Jones also had strong association with a lot of people who were kind of in the know. He was a strong supporter of Hugh Ainsworth,
who was a strong
supporter of the Warren Commission's findings,
right.
Penn
Jones was a critic of the Warren Commission, but he's sort of like a phony critic, I think. He's just,
right.
He's not the real deal. He's an early JFK, they call him an early conspiracy theorist, but he's got a lot of wrong friends, like Gary Mack, who ran that Sixth Floor Museum. He and Penn Jones were also buddies, and Mack originally was skeptical of the JFK assassination, but then he came all the way around so that the New York Times gave a glowing review when he died.
Wow.
That Penn Jones going out there to visit the witnesses is very suspicious. And it adds to the suspicion that Merton was assassinated.
Sure.
You know,
just
as
visit,
in those days,
yes.
In 1969, to fly out to the Philippines cost about $1,500. I don't know who paid for that. Because he had a failing little tiny newspaper in Midlothian, Texas. It was from a sharecropper family. I think they were selling off the land to just survive. But he did not have money. Somebody paid for his trip to the
Of course.
Island. Right. And he said he went to Bangkok and visited the room where Merton died. You know, if he went all the way to Bangkok, why wouldn't he get the police report? Or something. Some documents.
Yes, exactly.
I wrote to the Royal Thai Police because we don't have an original Thai language copy of the police report. And I wanted to see, we've got this English translation with no title, no author, no date. I'd like to see the actual Thai language police report. And they did not respond to us. But Penn Jones could have gotten that when he was there. You go all the way to Thailand, why don't you ask the police for the report, you fool?
Right, not just go and look at a room.
He wasn't really, and he never wrote anything up. I mean, and people said, well, Penn Jones looked into it, he didn't find anything, therefore, you know, everybody said Merton just had an accident because Penn Jones.
Okay.
They said if anything was there, Penn Jones would have found it. Well,
right.
I don't think so.
Huh.
But anyway, I think Phil Nelson's review of the book at Amazon, he tells a little bit more about Penn Jones than even
yes.
he knew. He's familiar with him.
Yeah, it was very good. Very good review. Really
yeah.
great. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. It's an amazing thing you've done. Really.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to tell you is about the shower story. How did that come about? Because
yes,
there was no shower mentioned in the early documents, early news reports, and for the first few years after Merton's death, it was just an accident, and there was no water. But I think people were skeptical, so they added this water in 1973. And it came out in a book. It was called The Asian Journal of Thomas Merton. And what they had done is took a diary that Merton kept on his last trip, and they put the diary together. They edited his diary and sort of told the story of his trip in Merton's words. But they added a postscript to the book by this man called Brother Patrick Hart. Now, Brother Patrick, a year before Merton died, became Merton's secretary, and he's known as Merton's friend. I'm not sure about that, but he's the one that wrote this story that Merton came back to the cottage and proceeded to take a shower. And see, I told you Father Say returned to the cottage about 5 minutes after Merton.
Mm-hmm.
The shower was in the hallway there.
Merton
was in the shower. He would have seen him. He would have heard it. He would have heard that
right.
noise. He would have heard the shower. He would have known he took a shower. But when they found the body, Father Say wrote in a letter that he saw Merton when he found the founder here as his fence. He thought maybe perhaps he might have been getting ready to take a shower. But he didn't say he took it. He didn't think he took a shower, because if you think he's getting ready to take a shower, you wouldn't say he took a shower.
Right. Right.
And Brother Patrick is he actually wrote this postscript in this book. He wrote a draft of the postscript, okay? And that's been preserved. I found the draft of the postscript in John Moffat's papers at the University of Virginia. And in the draft, he wrote that Merton returned to the cottage, and he said that they got a call from the embassy in Bangkok, and they told him that Merton had died at 3 o'clock. That's in the draft, right? He wrote 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Well, he sent this draft to John Moffat. John Moffat said, "No, you can't say that." He said, "Don't say 3 o'clock." He said, "That didn't happen." He said, "You know, it's not supported by the witnesses." He said, "He died around 2 o'clock." So Brother Patrick, who had written that this is what he was told by the embassy, just changed the story. Okay, well, then the embassy told us it was 2 o'clock. Well, you know, the embassy that told you something or they didn't. You can't just change what the embassy told you.
Right.
And he changed his story and said, well, now Merton returned to the cottage at 1:30 and took a shower and died at 2 o'clock. Well, he couldn't have returned to the cottage at 1:30 because he was still in the lunchroom. Everybody says he was in the lunchroom until 1:40. At 20 minutes to 1, he left the lunchroom and asked Father Say for the key to the cottage. And he and this other monk, Father de Grun, they walked to the cottage. It's about a 10 to 15 minute walk. So they got to the cottage just before 2. Father Say was walking behind them in the distance. He could see them walking ahead of him. So he's not far behind, but he's a good distance behind. But they all know that the time at 1:30, when Brother Patrick says he returned to the cottage at 1:30, that was so he would have time to take a shower, see, and then die at 2 o'clock. But this Brother Patrick, he's the originator of the shower story. And that story, that Merton proceeded to take a shower, has no evidence to back it up. And in fact, I got in touch with Brother Patrick by mail, and I told him, I know he's elderly and he's living in the infirmary down there at the Abbey, and he doesn't take any visitors. But I wrote to him, I said, look, I know you're busy. Write back, let me know. And I said, you can call me, I said, if you like, and tell me, I want to know what evidence you have that Merton took a shower. Well, I was at a baseball game when he called me. I was watching the Yankees and Baltimore Orioles. And then, what do you know, I got my phone off at the ball game, and Brother Patrick calls me, but he left me a voicemail, right? And in the voicemail, which I still have, he said, well, I don't have any evidence. There isn't any evidence that Merton took a shower. But he said he must have taken a shower because it's very hot in Bangkok. That's all he's got. There's no evidence Merton took a shower. No witnesses say it. None of the official reports say it. And people that found the body thought he might have been getting ready to take a shower. But there's nothing, no evidence that he took a shower. It all originated with Brother Patrick in 1973. And it's been repeated and repeated and repeated. Sometimes it's a bath, sometimes it's a shower. Incredible.
It is.
But that's the story. It's the popular story. The popular story is the shower story, but it all originates with Brother Patrick. Brother Patrick Hart. He's the originator of the shower story. And
I wonder why.
Well, because I think people just don't get killed by fans. You know, you got to add some water to make it believable. I mean, everybody knows if you, you know, throw a hairdryer into the bathtub with yourself, you could get electrocuted. So you got to have water and electricity can be fatal in the right situation. So they just thought, well, people aren't going to buy the fan story. Let's add the shower to it. That'll make it believable.
But so they weren't even chasing each other. They weren't even close to each other.
No, they weren't. But see, people don't know that. People don't know the layout of the cottage. They had never read the witness statements. They've never seen the official reports. They just got these books out there, and the academia, I mean, it's just really pathetic that these Notre Dame theologians and all these scholars have just repeated the story. There's one guy, Father James Martin, he's a Jesuit in New York. He calls himself a big admirer of Merton. There are four different versions of his story. You know, on our website, we have that poem, So Long, that you were talking about earlier. And Father Martin has said that Merton was slipped in the bathtub and grabbed a fan and died.
Really?
He also wrote that he was stepping out of the bathtub and slipped on the tile floor.
It wasn't a bathtub.
Grabbed a fan and was electrocuted. Well, and then Father Martin, this is the same guy, has also said that Merton was stepping out of a shower, and as he stepped out, he slipped and grabbed the fan. And he also said that after he got out of the shower, he slipped and fell. So he's got four different stories from one Jesuit priest who calls himself an admirer of Thomas Merton. Father James Martin has four different versions, and he tells them with such confidence. You can see him on YouTube. He'll tell the story of how Father Merton died, slipped in the bathtub, and it just rolls off his tongue. And he's got I guess depends what the weather is, what the version is going to be, but they're always the same. Then Merton was wet and touched the fan and electrocuted himself. It's just the same old story. And people, you'll find it in books. If you look up, you could Google Merton shower electrocuted or fan, and you'll find, you go to Google Books, you'll find all kinds of books with many different ways of telling the story. Sometimes he touches the lamp. Sometimes he dies on December 5th instead of December 10th. I mean, the facts don't mean anything. They just create their own story. The important thing is that it was an accident, and Merton, it's his fault because he was clumsy. In fact, Brother Patrick Hart, the one who created the sour story, I've heard this guy on YouTube at the different things where he says that Merton was so clumsy. He says he was a clumsy guy. He said we were surprised he didn't electrocute himself at the Abbey. Imagine that.
Amazing. Amazing.
He's so clumsy. We thought he would have killed himself down here a long time ago.
That's horrible.
It is horrible. If someone has been assassinated and you blame the victim for killing himself. It's terrible. And it's his own brothers. Now, I got to grant you, there's a lot of monks down there at Gethsemane Abbey that are very fine men. And it's just a couple of them there. Abbot Flavian, who's now deceased, he's buried out in Berryville, Virginia. Abbot Flavian and Brother Patrick were key players in this cover-up. There's no doubt about it. And Brother Patrick, he originated that shower story. He's responsible for it, and he's perpetuated it, and he wrote that phony postscript in that book, The Asian Journal of Thomas Merton, and he's a player. I don't know why he did it. I don't know his motivation, but he's a perpetuator of the myth of the accidental electrocution and shower story. That's Brother Patrick Hart.
And people remember the myths because they came out first, and your book came out later. But people remember.
We'll turn the corner eventually. What people need to do is what Thomas Merton did. Remember, Thomas Merton, I told you, wrote about 10,000 letters, right? And people need to write letters. They need to write letters to the Catholic news media. EWTN was one of their television stations. They need to write letters to that abbey down at Gethsemane and to their own newspapers. I need people to, let's get the truth out about Thomas Merton. Let's get justice for Thomas Merton. People have to write letters just like Merton did and tell the story.
Okay, we'll be right back.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, You probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and we have Hugh Turley, T-U-R-L-E-Y, on the program. And somebody just Skyped me something that Thomas Merton said. Let me just share that with you. And I quote, "The importance of detachment from things. The importance of poverty is that we are supposed to be free from things that we might prefer to people. Wherever things have become more important than people, we are in trouble. That is the crux of the whole matter." Unquote.
Yes. Yes, it reminds me of another thing Merton said that I liked. Is he said, poverty is our strength.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because when people are afraid of losing their job, their career,
oh sure,
property, and not just physical material goods, but people are afraid of losing the approval of others. People like to be, they like to be part of the club, part of the group. I mean, they don't want to sacrifice anything. They want to hang on to these things. But Merton says poverty is our strength. And he was a man who was completely detached. I mean, you think about this guy. Here he is in a monastery, and he has no money. He has no home. He has no family. He doesn't care what you think about him. He's going to tell the truth. And a man like that who's completely untethered is a real danger to the powers that be. I mean, this is a guy they can't control, so they had to kill him.
Wow. You're right.
The quote you read is very similar to what he said when he said, poverty is our strength.
Yes.
That is a completely detached individual. The only thing he was connected to was God. He was tethered to, he had faith in God, and that was it. But you can't really take that away from him, because if you kill him, he's going to get to where he's going anyway.
Sure. Sure. We do have a caller with a question. So let's let's take...
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I'd like to say make several points. For one, I think what we should do is, instead of focusing on his death and the circumstances and devoting time to that, we should focus on his writings. And, the best way to get at his killers is to emulate him and spread his ideas, particularly amongst the youth. So it would always be good to recommend to nieces and nephews and young people some of his finer books and get them to read him.
That's a good point.
Yeah, also, because nothing, the CIA would hate more is if more people started behaving and thinking like Thomas Merton.
Yes.
You could also, there was an element of atavism in his, his pacifism from his mother's, Quakerism, because his mother was a Quaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of interesting, because I was just reading about him, thanks to your show.
Yeah.
Also, I would argue that he did have money in a sense. I mean, he sold lots of books. He wrote 70 altogether, I believe.
Yeah, that money's owned by, that was owned by the community, his religious community. He didn't have a penny of that.
Yeah, but he still lived quite the jet-setter lifestyle, even as a youth. Because his father, Owen, was a painter.
And then before he entered the religious community, when he entered the religious community, he had nothing. He gave up all of his material goods.
But still, his going and attending boarding schools as a youth, I mean... Most people can't afford that today, So there's money coming somewhere for him when he was young.
In his youth, yes. But once he entered the religious community, the Trappist order, he took a vow of poverty and he had nothing.
Right, but still, there's social connections there. It's not really poverty. They have a network providing for him and feeding him. Yeah.
Yeah. He did have a
Yeah, if you let me hold, I have one more comment. Thank you.
Oh, I'm with you. I'll hold you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5. This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus? for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500. It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsite.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just 2 bottles, a 4-month supply. I take Extendivite 3 times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Alrighty, welcome back. My internet had kind of a little interruption there, but I do appreciate the phone call from Paul and your remarks up until everything went blank. But
sorry, we lost him.
Yeah.
No, am I here?
Are you there? Is Paul still
there?
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, my internet went down for a minute, so.
I really enjoyed, I read a few of Merton's books. I really enjoyed how he kind of opened up Eastern mysticism through, especially the Taoism. And I really liked his book about Kuang Zhu. I really, so he kind of, in a sense, led me towards Eastern mysticism. And it's ironic because here he is a Catholic. And so,
but he wasn't afraid. He wasn't afraid to evaluate other things.
That's true. That's what I admire about him. And that, but in a sense, one could say he was almost one of those semi-simpatico with a globalist, but not, you know, in one sense, but in melding the religions and finding common ground among religions.
Right. And there is common ground.
Exactly. It's true too. So
yes.
Anyway, I just want to make those points about him. I enjoyed him. He was a fine man, and people should read his books.
Have you read his book, Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander?
No.
Well, I mean, just because you mentioned that people should read his books, you know, if in this book he gets into the Kennedy assassination, and he says that the I'll read you just a short sentence here. He says that the country's been undergoing a real emotional crisis. Now, he wrote this like a few days, like maybe within a week of the assassination. He said, Oswald, suspected of shooting Kennedy, has now been shot himself by a super patriot, a curious, impulsive type, a nightclub owner. The whole thing is so odd, it is barely credible. And he was very doubtful about the whole Kennedy story, this assassination, where nowadays, you know, the news media in this country still tells us that Oswald killed Kennedy. That's the official story of the government. It's the official story of the American press. But Merton didn't believe it at the time. He was very perceptive. And I think this book, Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander, has a lot of good quotes like that in there where he shows you that you can't trust the news media in this country because they're propagandists. And that's worth reading. People need to read books like that. There's not many out there.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Righty. Someone in the chat room also mentioned C.S. Lewis, who I also have read and appreciate very much. But, yes, this...
He's a popular figure. Merton is very popular, and like Paul is interested in him because of Taoism and things, and that people. He's an interesting story to pick up because he has a following of people that like Merton. So I think the book has an opportunity to tell a story through Merton about cover-ups. Cover-ups not just by our press, but by the Catholic press that participated in the cover-up of Merton's death, and how the truth is hidden from the public. And there's a lot to learn, not just about Merton's death, but about how we are deceived daily.
Right.
Are you familiar, Deanna, with David Martin's 17 Techniques for Truth Suppression?
Yes, we've covered that in previous radio programs.
Well, those are in the book. They're Appendix 1 in the book. They're there.
Yes.
I'm so glad to have them in the book because that's just in itself is... they weren't written for Merton's death, but they certainly apply. And they apply
sure.
to a lot of things that we're told. So those 17 Techniques for Truth Suppression, anybody can Google that, and it's they're all over the Internet now, the David Martin's 17 Techniques for Truth Suppression.
Right. Now, also, did this also have something to do with the Second Vatican Council, where everything was sort of co-opted and changed and altered? And
his death?
Well, just, yes. Do you think it was...
I don't think his death had anything to do with that, but Merton actually was... I think he might... Of course, none of us are right about everything. And Merton was very accepting of the Second Vatican Council. I think he was interested and open to the ecumenical movement. I'm not sure the Second Vatican Council was, everything it was supposed to be, and maybe it did some things that were harmful, but I don't think he opposed it. He was probably favorable toward the changes that were coming with the church at that time. But whether he was right or wrong about it, I don't think it has anything to do with his death. We do mention the current Pope in the book, though.
Okay, yes. Tell us about him.
Pope Francis brought up Thomas Merton because he was speaking to the United States Congress, and he brought up the fact that I think he mentioned some famous Americans. He mentioned the name... Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King, Thomas Merton, and Abraham Lincoln. This is kind of funny because I think Dorothy Day and Merton and King were all anti-war, and Lincoln was very
pro-war. Was a warmonger.
They lumped him in, but the other three was sort of amusing for the Pope to throw that in there. But the Pope, at the time of the Civil War, the Pope did not share... Lincoln's views on all that carnage. He was trying to get him to negotiate a settlement and get the war ended. And the Pope was also concerned that so many Irish Catholics were being used for cannon fodder. But when Merton was, the Pope was here, it was kind of interesting, too, because he He came to Washington before he went up to New York. And when he went to New York, he went to the 9/11 memorial. And he talked about it being hallowed ground. And I don't know in what sense I would ask Catholics, is the 9/11 memorial hallowed ground? It's a crime scene, but I don't know what makes it holy. I mean, a lot of people died there, and that's very tragic and sad, but it doesn't make it a holy site. It's not a Catholic site, but the Pope seemed to think it was. But again, that 9/11 thing was launched more war, really. It launched the war in Afghanistan and the invasion of Iraq and more things that I think Merton would have opposed. I don't think Merton would not have been a big 9/11 fan, like, let's go get him. That's not the kind of man he was. And the Pope also did something interesting. He was in Washington. He went and spoke at St. Matthew's Cathedral, which is downtown. And that's the cathedral where John F. Kennedy was buried out of. And there's a spot on the floor. It's probably about 6 feet across. And the words there that are in the floor says that the remains of John F. Kennedy rested here.
Wow.
His Requiem Mass on November 25th, 1963, before the removal to Arlington, where they lie in expectation of the heavenly resurrection. Now, the Pope incredibly stood on that spot. That's where he's standing. And he's addressing a church full of bishops. And he never mentioned John F. Kennedy.
I
mean, he's the only Catholic president the United States ever had. He's assassinated. The Pope is in the church where his funeral was. And he never mentions the name Kennedy. I mean,
terrible.
I don't know. Kind of made me wonder about that Pope.
Kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah,
a lot of people have been wondering about a lot of things that he's been doing.
Well, he's so popular, too. That's the other thing with the Pope is he's very popular with the press. And I think that's a kind of tells you about the Pope because he's so popular with the press. They just love him and they adore him and they think he's just the greatest thing. But this is the
well,
same
that
press.
Well, that should make us suspicious.
Yeah, this is the same press that covers up the murder of Thomas Merton.
Right.
And they're the friends of the Pope. If the Pope was criticized by the press, he might be a better Pope.
Right. Okay, we have another caller. Ed in Utah. Ed, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. I hope everything's going okay for you.
Yes. I can say yes.
Okay. Listen, I have a few differing thoughts with what I'm hearing here. Like you, Deanna, I didn't know a whole lot about Thomas Merton. How exactly are you spelling his last name, sir?
Merton.
M-E-R-T-O-N. Merton. Merton. M-E-R-T-O-N.
Oh, so it's a Merton. M-E-R-T-O-N. Okay.
M-E-R-T-O-N, right.
Again, yeah, I have to be honest, you know more about him than I do, obviously, but just the figure he was, just the things he's saying, it does seem to, of all the other characters that were killed in 1968, so let me just rush right into where I'm going with this. The killers in 1968, the assassins, who largely are tied with the Israeli lobby. The fact is that they killed John F. Kennedy's brother, who was about to win the presidency, because he would have, of course, got to the bottom of his father's killers and exposed this. The other thing is, Martin Luther King, despite his faults and whatnot, he was a problem for them. He was going to go over and expose what the Israelis were doing now, since they'd gotten away with attempting to sink the USS Liberty, killing 34 American servicemen the year before. Martin Luther King, was going to go take up for the Palestinians. This is something that the Jewish communists could not tolerate, left or right, in their paradigm. So the fact that he was killed so close to two assassinations that were obviously tied into the killing of our president, which the book Final Judgment by the late Michael Collins Piper, and we're on the precipice of his third anniversary of his death, are we not, Deanna?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Yes. Very sad here within a couple weeks.
Yes.
So you tie in the book Final Judgment by Michael Piper, to me, the last word on the JFK assassination. You tie that in with Dr. Pepper's book, An Act of State, in the killing of Martin Luther King, which he does not come down and say that the Israeli lobby or the CIA did this. Mark Lane does, great American, Jewish American Mark Lane, who saved the American Free Press back when it was called the Spotlight from being taken over. So taking these things together and just looking at the date of this man's death, yeah, I think it does tie in. And I think your point, Deanna, that the communists, as was exposed by Bella Dodds, a black American communist, that they were moving in to infiltrate in the early 60s, late 50s, the Catholic Church with Vatican II. And so Mel Gibson's father was onto that.
Right.
Yes, he was tying that together. So those are my thoughts I'd throw out there at you for commentary here or feedback.
Yeah, those are good points. I guess the Merton thing might have gotten a little confusing to you because my co-author's name is Martin, David Martin.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's M-A-R-T-I-N, and then Merton's last name is M-E-R-T-O-N.
So, well, thanks for clarification.
Yeah, sometimes we said Martin when we're talking about my co-author, so that might have been part of the confusion.
Right. Well, like you said, you got this started, and I'm so appreciative. You got this started, and you've done so much legwork. But I will say, someone of the stature of your host there, who I almost am certain that you're tracking with some of what I'm saying here, Deanna, in that the tentacles of the tribe and what they've done to our country and our world just cannot be ignored with the year 1968, 1 year after these attempted sinking of the USS Liberty, and then in 68 itself, the killing of John F. Kennedy's brother, who would have exposed them without a doubt. This is just too much of a coincidence to not make the tie-ins and what have you. So I'll let you folks go and listen to your feedback and your continued points.
Let me tell you one more thing before you hang up. One more thing before you hang up. Are you familiar with Phil Nelson's book in the USS Liberty, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, if you go to Amazon.com and look at our book, The Martyrdom of Thomas Merton, it's a long review by Phil Nelson, which brings in some JFK aspect to it, which might interest you. It might be more things that you already know. It was an interesting eye-opening review for me because Nelson brought up some things that I was not aware of.
Right. Yeah, that was a great review.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling.
Sir, are you familiar, before I go, since you brought that up, of a former RBN host here, a colleague of Deanna, Phil Turney?
I've read something. I think Martin did a review of a book by him, maybe. I'm referring to the name.
Okay, because he was a former host, and he's the author of What I Saw That Day, and he's tied in everything that went on within the Israeli nation, the mini-state over there. Direct so much, and I think I don't know what your interests are in the future, but boy, there could be can you imagine a big panel discussion with you, Deanna, of Phil Turney and your guest here and some of these other people?
Oh, would be wonderful.
Yeah,
yes.
You're going to bring Phil Turney, and you need to bring my co-author in. He's more knowledgeable of Mr. Turney than I am.
Well, all of you. That's what I meant. Yes, all of you. What a discussion, and I couldn't think of a better forum than this for that discussion. Well, thank you for the time.
Well, thank you for calling.
All righty, we'll talk to you later.
All righty, take care. All righty. There is just so many things that happened during the 60s, the immigration reform, and if you look at everything, that's why I like timelines. If you look at everything that happened during the 1960s, and you can kind of tie it together because everything is interlocked and relevant to everything else, just my opinion.
Right.
Yeah. There was a movie made, too, just recently called Erasing the Liberty, which... is very good. But anyway, a lot of interesting things. And certainly this individual, this wonderful individual, Thomas Merton, certainly would have been a voice, was a voice.
And we don't have anybody like him today. That's the sad thing.
That is so true. There is no one like him.
If we had one like him, they would kill him.
They probably would. All righty. We're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest the last 2 hours has been Hugh Turley. And let me share with you something that we have referred to. Beverly K. Ekman wrote, and this is something that you have been faced with. Framing the debate is key to keeping control of the psychological environment. When you frame the debate, you direct or drive the discussion. That is, you deflect attention from the real agenda. In effect, you tell people what they're going to think about and for how long. And that is what has happened with Thomas Merton. With all of these stories that have come out before you have told the truth, all of these stories are now what is believed. And it was deliberate. It was a deliberate consensus thinking operation where they produced all of this junk, all of these fabrications, so that people would be so confused. And you've come out with the truth. And I hope that your book will withstand this consensus thinking and that people will read the book and know what really happened and be able to accept the truth as you have portrayed it, as you have written it. You're not portraying it. You've written the truth. You have the documents. Everything's there.
You're right. It's the nice thing about the story, though, is that nobody has, I mean, it's been, they've gotten away with it for so long that, with the lie, that there's no gatekeeper that's on duty at the moment. And we're able to just bring this, all this stuff up to the surface, and there's nobody prepared to knock it down. You know, I used to be overwhelmed by the Kennedy assassination because there were so many books about it, I didn't know which one to read.
Right.
And, it's almost becomes, and of course, that Warren Commission, I mean, you've got 24 volumes. I mean, people could say, this is too much. I can't digest all of that. But this is a very simple story. The book is about 300 pages, but most people tell me they read it in a couple of days, and it's hard to put down because we're telling the story, and it's like a, it's unfolding right in front of you. The facts. And it's fun. It's a fun thing to read, and the back part. I mean, it's not there that long, really, because I think the last 30 pages are there's a lot of documents and an index or so. But the text itself is probably about 275 pages. But it's a great story. It's a lot of fun to read, and it tells a story, and it's kind of like a true crime story. It's a murder mystery. My brother likes Sherlock Holmes. He said it reads like a Sherlock Holmes book. He said, all the way you guys picked up all these clues and put them all together. He said it was really fun, and he enjoyed it because of that aspect of it. So it's a fun book to read.
Well, the truth is always interesting, and it's always, it's people like you and Dave who bring it for us, and thank you so much for all of your efforts and all the time that both of you have spent on this project, because you could have gotten waylaid by all the nonsense and not have pursued it and taken it to its finish, which you have done very nicely.
Well, I'm kind of like Thomas Merton. I don't watch the news anymore. I don't read newspapers. So it's hard to get waylaid when you're not paying attention to the noise. Merton was away from those things himself, and it's incredible how much you can know by not watching the news.
Right. I think Thomas Jefferson said that. Okay.
Oh, good. Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you so very much for being on the program today. Take care, listeners. We'll talk to you next week. Talk with you next week. Bye-bye now.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
It has come to our attention.